Device Talkers. Welcome back to Device Talks AI. My name is Caitlin Brown, and I'm the managing editor for Device Talks, and I have been very, very busy. And I know I'm not alone in feeling this, but Tom and I are coming very close to two huge events. So September 10th, 11th, and 12th, we are hosting the Connected Health Virtual Series, where we are featuring Canary Health, Adana Medical, Baxter, and BD to come together to help us with the opportunities and challenges coming out of Connected Health. That three-day series is completely complimentary, so please come to devicetalks.com to register for that webinar. It is live, so make sure you come with questions. Again, I will be hosting, and so will Tom Salemi, so please do join us. And then, as you probably know by now, Device Talks West is just around the corner, October 16th and 17th in Santa Clara at the Santa Clara Convention Center. That has been taking up every spare minute of my time, my mental acuity, every conversation that I've been having lately. It is coming together beautifully, but boy, is it a lot of moving parts to bring an event like this together. I'm not going to talk about it too much because as my featured guest today, I'm bringing on the man himself, our editorial director, Tom Salemi, to talk to all of us about Device Talks West, the who, what, where, when, why, and a special emphasis on the why. But before I move on to my interview with Tom, I want to talk about my keynote interview for this episode of Device Talks AI. So I have had the greatest honor of sitting down with Dr. Igal Samsett, the General Manager of Cardiology Care for GE Healthcare. So Dr. Samsett and I, we talk about GE Healthcare's proactive AI strategy that has continued to keep them at the top of the FDA list of 510K clearances for AI-enabled medical devices for the third year in a row. We talk about GE's acquisition of Caption Health in 2023 and how that inspired Caption AI. It's a new technology that integrates into the handheld ultrasound devices like B-Scan. We talk about how this Caption AI and integrated into V-Scan is democratizing cardiac assessments, which is enabling healthcare teams with varying degrees of experience being able to perform echocardiograms with real-time guidance. It is really quite a game changer and overcomes so many of the challenges that we've been facing, especially since COVID. Dr. Samsett and I, we also talk through the regulatory challenges that have been associated with the development of AI-enabled devices. He gives us some advice, which I think is really, really helpful. And then, of course, I ask the big question, you know, what can we look forward to next coming out of GE Cardiology Care's group? I'm very excited to dig into that interview. But before doing so, I am going to introduce Tom Salemi, Editorial Director of Device Talks, to talk to us about Device Talks West. Tom Salemi, Editorial Director for Device Talks. Welcome to Device Talks AI.
Thank you, Caitlin Brown, Managing Editor of Device Talks. It's good to be here.
So we are back to school. I know that your eldest is back to Purdue, and then your youngest is starting a new school. Mm-hmm. So how's the back to school been treating you?
Oh, the drive out to Indiana was long and arduous, but we had a nice time and listened to some good music on the way and caught a baseball game. So we've reacclimated to going from 4 to 3 quicker than I thought we would. I thought we'd take a little more time to adjust, but I think it was just familiar muscles. We were kind of like, oh, we've done this before. So that's been fine. The other one going to high school, that's going to be a new thing. He's been homeschooled for the last couple of years since COVID, and this is a new adventure for all of us. So we're excited to see where it takes us.
Well, best of luck. Jensen, on my end, it's not necessarily going back to school, but he's turning 2 on Saturday.
Yikes.
Can you even believe that?
I cannot.
Yeah. So we, this morning, my husband and I dropped Jensen off at daycare, so his own version of school. And the day before his birthday, they're going to celebrate his birthday, and we picked up little mini donuts.
Oh, nice.
And he walked into daycare this morning going, "Happy birthday, Jensen. Happy birthday, Jensen." It was probably the cutest thing in the entire universe. Well, exciting all around.
Absolutely. Those birthdays are truly special. So enjoy that one.
It's a lot of fun. Well, I asked you today for a reason. We are coming up to Device Talks West, October 16th and 17th in Santa Clara, California. I know that I'm personally looking forward to it very much. But you are the editorial director, and I've always wanted the opportunity to better understand how you pull together the agendas, your specific focus for each of the different events. So I was hoping to really better understand your thought process coming into West. So for those who don't know, can you give us the lay of the land? How many days is Device Talks West? How many tracks would you cover? Just give us the 411.
Sure. So the actual dates of the event will be October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. We will have an opening reception on the 15th and that Tuesday night. So it's, I guess, a two plus day affair. We will have four to five tracks going on simultaneously, except when there's keynotes in the morning and at the end of the day. And we are always, of course, focused on engineering and manufacturing and the making of medical devices. We love engineers. We love folks who are in the trenches creating these life-saving devices. So we'll continue to focus on that. We did alter the way we're looking at that a bit at West. Normally, we've sort of focused on an engineering track and a manufacturing track and bringing products to market track. This time at West, we're trying something new where we're focusing on a few technologies that we think are important. Interventional technology being one, surgical robotics, of course, connected health, and we'll have a neurotech track. And we'll also look at structural heart. And you're leading a fantastic women's health panel, women's health track. I keep saying that track. So we're focusing on these areas within medtech that are important. And within that, of course, we'll continue to look at what it takes to make a great medical device. But really just kind of wanted to give a shout out to these technologies that are really making a difference in medtech. So we're excited to be working, and we can get into some of the details of those tracks with most of the major OEMs in the industry to help tell their medtech stories.
Well, it was really a great overview. What I really want to understand is how, for structural heart, for example, how mm-hmm. do you choose structural heart to go to Device Talks West for 2024? I mean, how is it? What's in the news? Is it the main OEMs in the regional area? I mean, how do you narrow down that focus?
Yeah, that's a great question. A little bit of both. I mean, if you kind of look at the Venn diagram of how our brain works in putting together this, there's certainly two circles, one of which is an area of hot interest and innovation, and the other is what companies are nearby or at least regionally close that we could draw from that could tell their stories. So because we do sort of really try to employ almost a farm-to-table kind of a philosophy when it comes to our regional meetings. We really want to draw not only the local companies, but the folks who work at those local companies. So in this case, of course, we've got Edwards Life Sciences down in Irvine, which is not necessarily around the corner, but certainly is a commutable distance to Device Talks West for a couple of days. And they'll be leading off our structural heart track. And then, of course, Abbott is nearby. And we'll have them represented as well. So we'll have two great sessions with these two great leaders in the space. And yes, to your question, it's because it's both popular and because there are companies in the area that we can draw from.
We'll be back with Tom Salemi here shortly. I thought it was really important to bring in Tom to better understand how we create conferences for the medical device industry, what the approach is, what the goal is, and who those key stakeholders are to bring it all together. As a thank you for hearing us talk about something we care so much about, we are offering 25% off of your registration with the code DTPOD 25. That's Device Talks Podcast 25, shortened to DTPOD25. Get 25% off. That's a no-brainer. Okay, now it's time to start my interview with Dr. Igal Samset, General Manager of Cardiology Care for GE Healthcare. Dr. Samset, take it away. Dr. Igal Samset, General Manager for the Cardiology Care Area for GE Healthcare. Thank you very much for joining me on Device Talks AI.
Thank you, Kellen, and please call me Igal.
Oh, I will. Thank you. So I've been really looking forward to our conversation for a few different reasons. In particular, I know that you have 13 years of experience at GE Healthcare, and I always find that really fascinating to have a long tenure with a single organization. So as you're approaching your 13th year, and you know, pre-congratulations for that, can you walk me through your journey into medtech? I mean, how did you find your way here?
Well, actually, my journey into medtech started almost 30 years ago. So when I was in an engineering school back in the late 90s, I got invited to be a visiting researcher at Stanford Medical University in Palo Alto. And I got there and I started to work on intravascular ultrasound. And I just got so fascinated by, you know, the ability to image the heart from the inside and actually from the inside of the coronary arteries. So I really had this passion for, you know, taking my engineering skills and then applying them in a way that could benefit patients and could benefit healthcare. So I sort of got into cardiac imaging, you know, intravascular ultrasound already then back in the 90s. And then I spent probably 20 years or so working more academically with medical imaging. So I was working in hospitals, universities. I did my PhD in MR guided interventions, where we used a big MR scanner to be able to guide interventions both into the brain and into the liver, but really got into more and more cardiology along the way. You know, image processing, robotics, also pretty cool image processing and, you know, engineering things in cardiology, but always with that very cross-disciplinary setting, you know, working together with surgeons, with radiologists, with cardiologists inside a hospital setting. So I had great time and great fun doing that. But I think what sort of drove me to later consider moving towards to the industry, sort of away from the academics, was that I wanted to see if there's a way as an engineer to have a bigger impact than, you know, beyond writing papers and, you know, getting on the podium to talk about the research, but really impact patient care. Because the interesting thing with medical products is that, you know, they can be created by an engineer, maybe a researcher, but to be able to be used by a patient or on a patient, they have to be made a product. And that's where sort of really GE Healthcare came in. So GE Healthcare are present in Norway, where I'm based, with our cardiovascular ultrasound factory. So that was really a startup back in the 70s, acquired by GE Healthcare in the late 90s. And that sort of became my way into medtech from an industrial perspective. You know, coming there with all that academic, sort of interesting background, but being a part of an organization that could take that type of research and make it a product and then put it at the bedside.
Wow. You know, I hear a lot of the different pathways that take the innovators into the medical device industry. But one of my favorite is exactly what you've outlined, where you take this passion for engineering and you marry it with a cross-disciplinary exercise, so like in the hospitals, and really find that you have an interest in cardiovascular and what you can do with that. And, you know, the idea of marrying patients and the right product for them is very medtech focused. So I mean, I really love hearing that. Do you feel as though this really diverse background has been helpful in your current role at GE Healthcare?
I absolutely think so, because I think what we do in GE Healthcare is really around innovation. It's about moving the frontier of what's possible. And this innovation really only happens if you have a number of ingredients is sort of put together. So first of all, obviously you had people with skills, You need to have access to the best possible research, and you need always interdisciplinarity, because that's sort of where the magic happens when you get people with different backgrounds together. So I think for me, having that background coming into GE Healthcare, where it's sort of understanding both the clinical needs, understanding how a researcher is thinking, and then learning in GE Healthcare how an industrial company is thinking, to be able to take an idea and really deploy it at scale. I think that's, for me, just been an amazing journey. And it's been the reason why I'm staying with the company for so long, because we're always able to sort of reinvent ourselves and to take that input from the outside world, work with customers, and then create fantastic products.
It's a very engineering way of thinking. So my grandfather was an engineer, and one of my favorite things was seeing how he would take even personality types and figure out how they fit together for better outcomes. So it's like engineering wasn't just about the components. So I really feel a lot of similarity between my most favorite person in the entire world and yourself, and that could not be a more distinguished honor, let me tell you, because he really
Thank you.
So, you know, we talked through the researching background, we talked through, the root of engineering, and then the clinical and industry experience. Let's add another layer. So let's talk about artificial intelligence. That terminology in particular, or the term AI, is really overused. And I think the one thing that I even struggle with is really trying to understand what is AI. And I feel that definition is really personal, depending on what you're doing with it. You know, are you in the industry, are you a clinician, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you personally define AI? And then how does GE Healthcare define AI?
Well, I talked about my engineering background. Obviously, I could here come with a definition that is very technical and very sort of theoretical. But actually, I want to take a little bit different angle at it and sort of define it from an outcomes perspective. Because I think, there's a lot of hype around AI and this amazing tool, and there's so much that AI enables. But the only way that AI can be valuable for patients and for physicians is if it can really impact outcomes. So I think that, in GE Healthcare, when we started our journey on AI many years ago, we sort of focused on the fundamental layers of AI that we all are all quite familiar with, like AI algorithms that can do things faster, more precise, maybe more reproducible than humans can. So, it's always been about automation. The initial focus was about, as I said, faster, more precise, more repeatable. But I think that the true value that AI unlocks, and that's kind of maybe where I want to define AI, is that if AI can be applied in a way that can truly improve outcomes for patients, outcome for providers, outcome for payers, that's where we will find the value through AI. So it's not just about, we have a tool here, let's automate something. I think that AI is something that can help, in my role, being somebody that is in charge of care pathways or in cardiology care pathways for GE Healthcare, AI in care pathways, I think it will be not just one tool and one algorithm, it will be a suite of tools that really can add value to optimize care pathways. So I think that's maybe not a direct answer to your question, but I think that's kind of where I would want to put the focus, is on the value and the outcome of AI. And in my role, it's really about optimizing care pathways for the benefit of patients. But, the truly, I think, inspiring and exciting things with being in medtech is that all incentives are so aligned, you're in the medic company, if you're a physician, if you're a patient, just all about creating better outcomes for patients.
Well said. So here's then a wild card question based off of what you were saying right now. Do you have an example of a care pathway situation or challenge or obstacle where you saw the benefits of artificial intelligence through multiple platforms or multiple different pieces that it really helped improve that outcome? Can you give us an example that just helps illustrate what you're talking about?
Sure. Okay, I can do that. And maybe just before moving into an example, I can just give a couple of examples. So let's call it the the first layer that I talked about, because we in GE Healthcare have AI in so many different to our products. And, you know, we use AI to improve the way that we reconstruct images. We use AI in making automatic measurements and echo images. We use AI for, let's say, our echo cards can automatically recognize views. We have all of these sort of applications, so algorithms for AI. But one of the things that we developed, or actually this came to us through an acquisition, is that we have now put AI guidance onto handheld ultrasound. So we have what we call Caption AI on the Vscan Air handheld ultrasound. And that's really been an amazing application of AI where we turn something that is, let's say, a very technical AI model into a product, or I would almost say a service, that impacts patient pathways. Because with this technology, we can take somebody that might be clinically trained, but maybe not an expert in echo, to do and handle echo on a patient, either in the home or in the community, and then identify patients that can benefit from therapy at a very early stage, which could totally change the trajectory of that patient. So, you know, for example, patients suffering from aortic stenosis, which is affecting the aortic valve, can lead to hypertrophy, meaning that there's increased resistance for the heart, and can have a potentially very bad trajectory. If you can find those patients quite early and then manage their risk and then get them the right therapy, it can really be a life-transforming intervention for that patient. So in GE Healthcare, you know, I said we came into this technology through an acquisition. But actually, in the previous role I had in GE Healthcare, I was working with this team in Caption AI when we were running some hackathons. So basically, I was in our cardiovascular sound business. We went to some cities in the US, including San Francisco. We invited startups and students and engineers to come to a GE Healthcare hackathon where they could take their own technology and deploy it on GE Healthcare scanners. So this was using our bigger ultrasound cards. And we found this company that they participated in one of our hackathons. And then over time, we decided that, you know, they actually found a little nugget there in terms of applying AI in a way that can sort of unlock echo to less experienced users. So I think that's just one example where, you know, it's not just about technology. It's really about how you apply it and what it unlocks.
Well, so that acquisition was 2023 with Caption Health, correct?
Right.
Wow. And that came out of a hackathon. I had absolutely no idea. I feel like I have a need to set up another interview with you just to go through some of the other experiences with the hackathon and amazing technologies that came out of it.
Yeah, because we have tons of people coming to these hackathons and a bunch of ideas. You know, some of them were great and we were able to pursue. Some of them were not that great. But, you know, regardless, you know, it's just a fantastic sort of brainstorming, innovative experience there.
It's a real way to give back to not just our ecosystem, but the stars that are rising that could hopefully come into the medical device industry, which really is just the best industry in the world. Well, yeah. I want to dig more into Caption AI. I mean, I'm always really interested in how acquisitions change the strategy of an organization. So I understand now the impetus for Caption AI, but how did GE Healthcare go in with a clear vision that you wanted an AI capability or AI integrated into your Vscan, and then you went to see how that can happen, or did that happen more organically?
Well, I would say probably in all of our inorganic work, we always start with a strategy. You know, we look at what we have in terms of our products. We look at the customer problems and maybe where we see that there might be gaps, either in patient care or in patient pathways. And then we lay out a strategy to look at how we can fill that. So again, it's not so much about technology, honestly, but it's a lot around finding companies that can fill a gap either in the pathway or in the product portfolio that allows us to sort of go to the next step and next level there. So I wouldn't say Caption AI sort of was the one starting us on our AI journey. We already had done a lot of AI. We already had, like, you know, deep neural networks running on ultrasound scanners that can do view recognition, for example. So we sort of understood the space, but we found that what they had developed was just a fantastic complementary technology that allowed us to both take their technology and put it on some of our ultrasound scanners and be able to take what we had developed in handheld ultrasound to sort of help them move and grow even faster and make their sort of solutions more and more available.
So that complement really accelerates innovation. I mean,
100%. I mean, that's absolutely how it works. There's nothing better. That's true.
We're going to take a very quick break from my conversation with Dr. Samsett to bring back Tom Salemi to finish our conversation about the upcoming Device Talks West conference. Tom, you're up. Are there any particular speakers that have you excited? And I have to say it with the caveat that every one of our speakers make both of us just thrilled. And I mean that sincerely. You know, I'm not being facetious when I say it, because the fact that somebody's going to take time out of their incredibly busy schedule, typically fly out, make room for 24 to 48 hours of, again, their very precious time, that's meaningful and that's really important. But is there anybody... feel free to mention as many as you would like that you're like, I am going to be in the front row of that session. I cannot wait for it.
No, that's a great point. And I do want to underline your point that it's very gratifying to have folks from this industry agree to speak at our meeting and to actually be excited to speak at our meeting and to put the work in to create a presentation or prepare for an interview. And then also, as you said, to make the time to travel there and to be there. So I'm just enormously grateful to the industry for being part of our events, because they are a lot of fun to be at, I think, because we have those great people there. I was going to say they're a lot of fun to put together, but I think I'd be lying because it's a lot of work to put these together. Yeah. And I don't think it's very fun at all, but the outcome, this is like being at the smoker for like 10 hours. Like, that's not fun, but at the end of the day, you're like, all right, that was totally worth it. So we're in the smoking phase right now. Lots and lots of smoke. I don't want to pick just one. However, I'm very interested in talking with Andy Pierce at Stryker, because they've just kept acquiring companies over the last couple of months. And I said, oh, I can't wait to ask Andy about Care.ai. And now I can't wait to talk to Andy about Virtus Medical. So I'm particularly excited to talk to him. He'll be our closing keynote on October 16th. We'll be opening with Heather Knight of Baxter on that day as well. And Baxter is a company we really haven't had full representation. We had them at Device Talks Boston, but I'm excited to have them as one of our keynotes as well. So bringing sort of another OEM into the family, I'm very, very happy about that. And similar with Adam Elsesser, who's our keynote on the start of day two with Penumbra. Penumbra is a very cool company in the vascular space, both neurovascular and peripheral vascular. But they also have a cool play in VR. And I know Adam Elsesser has drawn up a very specific discussion around innovation. And he's a real thoughtful guy, interesting background. So I'm looking forward to that one as well. And I'll just mention our closing keynote. We'll have Tori Smith of NDatix, who will be our joint closing keynote with our Robo Business event. And we'll take a look at NDatix's swallowable pill cam, their pill robot. So that's going to be a cool device to see. It's gotten a lot of attention. I know it was a subject of a TED Talk. I think Forbes had them presented at an Asian conference in Asia. So they've been getting a lot of attention, so we'll be happy to have them there as well. But so those are our keynotes. I'll draw attention to those. But within all of that, good keynoteness will be lots of interesting and very technical track discussions that I think people will find very helpful as well.
Perfectly explains. And you know what I really like? The balance of the keynotes versus the panel discussions, because you're still drawing these perspectives from medtech leaders who come from the different markets and different therapeutic categories and disease states. But having this kind of one-on-one keynote really allows you to deep dive, where the panel discussions allow for diversity of perspective. Yeah. And for me, that's how I learn. I like to learn from kind of those two different ways. So I'm thrilled at the balance, which you have artfully created years over years. One of the other things that I kind of wanted to chat with you about is, when you think about a medical device conference, or you think about other conferences, you know that there's speakers and then there's attendees, but there are so many other types of medical device stakeholders who are a part of the conference. Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, we have the, and I'm just reiterating again, we have the speakers, we have the keynotes, we have the panelists. They put together what we call the editorial content. That's the information to walk away, to learn from, to help inspire your strategy and to help you build better medical devices. Then you have our incredible attendees. And if we didn't have our attendees, we wouldn't have a conference. Attendees, you know, they fill the seats. They're there to ask questions. And hopefully, if we're doing our job correctly, they really walk away with those actionable insights, so they can take that to their team and build better devices and hopefully be inspired. There's another layer of MedTech, you know, stakeholder who's part of our conferences, and those are our sponsors. And, you know, we say that if we don't have attendees, people in the seats, we don't have a conference. But if we don't have a sponsor, it's not even a conversation to have a conference. I mean, that's really kind of step one. And we have this huge exhibitor floor, which is new to me at Device Talks. I mean, prior to my conference life, I never really was in an exhibitor floor type of event. But the energy on these exhibitor floors is really unparalleled. So we have booths that promote so many stakeholders and suppliers and supporters of the medical device industry. Our sponsors also sponsor specific sessions and tracks. We have the Women in MedTech Luncheon that has so many sponsors, and I'll talk to that a little later in the episode as well. But can you tell us, one, why are sponsors so incredibly important, and why would a sponsor want to participate in an event like Device Talks West?
Sure. No, that's a great summation of the importance of the sponsor roles. And yes, the exhibit floor is fantastic, and we share that with the Robo Business event that I mentioned earlier, which is part of our company. So it's a really dynamic place for folks to present their services, to swap stories, to swap business cards, and to for anyone who's developing a medical device to find the team they need to get it done. But you're right also about the sessions, and that's really where our sponsors, I think, play a critical role in delivering a full complement or full syllabus for folks who are learning or want to learn about the medical device industry. Because we do have the OEMs there. We do put together great panels with companies that are making medical devices, the editorial content, as you said, and they tell great stories. What our sponsors are able to do with their presentations that immediately follow these presentations by the larger OEMs is really kind of drill down and give details, give specifics, give how-tos. So we really count on our sponsors for showing, sort of completing the story that was told from the session before. If someone has demonstrated this is what we're able to do in the renal denervation space or the structural heart space, or we'll have companies like Shockwave there talking about their product line. We're counting on our sponsors to say, now you've seen their vision, here's what we do, and here's how we can help you achieve your vision. So the sponsored content is just a great complement to the editorial content. So together, I think we're able to not only deliver big picture visions for medical device makers, but we're also able to give them the tools they need to make sure their visions come to become reality as well. So the sponsors are a critical part of our event in every possible way. And I'm just equally amazed that we have such a lineup of great sponsors who sign up for all of our Device Talks, just want to be part of Device Talks wherever we go. It's just very gratifying, and so happy to have this network and this community to draw from.
We really are part of the best industry in the world.
We really are.
There's no doubt.
We really are.
For anybody who wants to see who our incredible sponsors are for Device Talks West, please go to west.devicetalks.com. Also, look at our agenda. As mentioned, Tom has put together 2 days of insightful, intriguing, content, structural heart, robotics, surgical robotics, women's health, interventional technologies.
Interventional technology, connected health.
Yep. Am I missing any?
I don't think so, but I think you are as well. I don't have the website up in front of me, but we've got a lot going on for sure. But
yeah. We can challenge our listeners to see if I missed anything. Go to west.devicetalks.com/agenda. Let me know if I've missed anything. Also, please take a look at who is attending Device Talks West. So you can find that information on west.devicetalks.com. And then if you have any questions about the event, reach out to me, Kayleen Brown, or Tom Salemi on LinkedIn. We are so happy to get your questions via LinkedIn. You can also email us. I'm kbrown@wtwhmedia.com. Tom Salemi, T-S-A-L-E-M-I @wtwhmedia.com. But we so appreciate you listening to Device Talks AI. We so appreciate you joining us at Device Talks West, October 16th and 17th. And Tom, I so appreciate you taking your time to give us sort of the inside look at Device Talks West. Thanks for joining me.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Kayleen.
And that's it from our editorial director, Tom Salemi, about Device Talks West. I really hope that you join us. Let's get back to the meat of this episode. Dr. Eichel Samset, General Manager for Cardiology Care at GE Healthcare. For a more novice or a layperson, can you help explain maybe how the technology works in Caption AI with vScan?
Sure. So, you know, the starting point, and let's say the problem that we're trying to solve here is that to acquire a cardiac echo actually requires quite a bit of training or practice. You know, we have a handheld probe there. There are certain windows that you can image the heart through because the heart is covered by our ribs, of course. So you have to find where to put the probe, finding the exact right way to turn it to get the right view there. So what Caption AI is doing is really giving step-by-step real-time guidance through that that workflow. So on the monitor, you will see a little icon that in real time is changing to help you move the probe as you're performing the procedure. And when it finds that you have the right view, that you have, let's say, the best possible view of the heart there, it will automatically capture it and store it. So it's really that real-time feedback that makes us able to ensure that the clinicians that are using it are just getting the best possible images and that they are getting all the images that are required for, you know, a certain examination, for example. So that's how it works. That is, you know, a deep neural network running on the device itself and in real time giving feedback to the user to make sure that they are getting the best possible images.
So then how is that compared to earlier generations of vScan?
Well, you know, before this, with vScan, you would really need to be well-trained. So only the trained eye before Caption AI could do an echo exam. So you need, you know, months, if not years, of training to be able to put the right probe in the right place and to understand what a good image looks like and all that. But with this, we could give it to somebody that is much less experienced in echo. You know, it could be a nurse, it could be a physician that it doesn't have that training. So really, it's increasing the access to echocardiography, which is a fantastic view into the heart, right? And in the past, it could only be done by, let's say, a few people. Now there's almost anybody that truly, of course, you do need to understand how to look, how the heart is looking like and what you're after. But the AI is just making them almost perform like experts.
So in a way, it sort of democratizes cardiac assessments.
I think that's a great word, Kaylin. It's really democratizing it, making so much more available. So both the workforce can use it on a much bigger scale. And then at the receiving end, the patients can then benefit from that increased access to ultrasound.
I mean, that for me is my driving passion for artificial intelligence, is this idea that it takes a lot of the technical lift off, so we have more opportunities, more democratizing of different skill sets and needs. And then, you know, there's a lot of shortages, and I'm preaching to the converted here, but there's a lot of shortages, so this can help with that. I mean, I only see positivity and just the way that our world is changing for the better because of the integration of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this democratization, as you call it, is really allowing everybody to perform at the top of the license, you know, empowering caregivers to do as much as they can. There's a huge problem with workforce shortages, especially in the US healthcare system, but really globally, right? So I think that this type of technology that can be in a way transparent in a sense that you don't have to deal with the technology, just helping you to do a better job and helping people to be able to do maybe more advanced things than they could in the past. I think that's the type of solutions we're looking for.
Absolutely. One of the, I'm kind of thinking through one of the challenges of, I think, adopting or accepting and moving forward with artificial intelligence medical devices is there's this concern about regulatory and concern about the FDA. You know, how do you go down a pathway that doesn't exist? I mean, you know, as a tangent, I would argue that is medtech, right? We're always going down pathways that don't exist. Right. But there's something about AI that really holds a lot of people back in the industry. So that being said, I mean, are you comfortable maybe sharing some of the regulatory hurdles in getting your FDA clearance?
Well, I would actually not necessarily call them hurdles, because remember that the regulatory and the FDA are here to protect patients. And we all are, as I said earlier, aligned around what we want as the best possible outcomes for the patient. So nobody is served with a product getting on the market and not meeting regulatory standards. So I wouldn't, again, call it a problem. I think it's more of a challenge because, you know, to do that, we need to make sure that these devices obviously are safe and effective, and that they're also performing well over time, like after we have put that product out there in the market. Now, specifically for Caption AI, it was found that there was really no predicate device that we could compare that algorithm to. So the team had to go through the de novo pathway there. Now, FDA was super helpful in terms of also guiding and giving feedback along that path, but I would say it was a heavy lift. But I think that we are very glad that we and the Caption AI team did that lift, because they were really able to prove the quality of the algorithm and its ability to perform to those performance standards. And I think that's really what we need. So I would be more concerned, to be honest, with areas where AI is deployed and there's no regulation, because there are spaces where it's okay to deploy AI with, you know, little regulation. And I think really we want to make sure that we have a strategy in GE Healthcare that is very responsible when it comes to AI, that we are the stewards of this data and the models, and that we can allow them to perform at the best possible standards. So I would say regulatory is really our partners, and they're helping us to make the advancement here. But there's a trade-off, right? Because we do also want to bring innovations quickly to market because they will hopefully benefit patients. So I think these are sort of the trade-offs that we need to have there, you know, quality, but also speed of innovation.
I love how you redefined it. With the word challenges in particular, I believe that challenges have opportunities. So I think that's the best way thinking about it. Do you have any advice for anyone else who's trying to go down the FDA pathway? I think that you're very clear in saying that, you know, they're partners, and it's a good thing. It's a very positive way of thinking about it. It may be challenging, but out of challenges, you have opportunities, of course. But do you have any advice or examples that might help someone who's being held back to just move forward?
Yeah. Now, the way I like to sort of think about things or products like this is truly to first to envision what the end game is going to look like. So there's going to be a journey from where you are to the end game, of course. But if you can think about how's that product going to look like in the hands of a user, you know, to visualize that and then to work with users, maybe even before you develop anything, to sort of, let's say, mock it up, to sort of recreate your vision in a way that you can validate that it makes sense and it will have value and will be useful in the end there. So I think that's kind of one advice, you know, really start from the end and then work backwards. The other advice, which I think is crucial in AI, is related to your data strategy, because AI is and will continue to be very data hungry. And having access, of course, to a lot of data is oftentimes going to, there's a little challenges there as well, right? You know, legally, you know, financially, all of that. But just thinking through the data strategy very early so that the data that is required to develop that AI model, to develop that product, to develop that user experience, that you think about from the beginning of the project, because it's going to take time. And if you start that too late, you know, it's a no-go.
That's really helpful. And I think in particular, people are interested in how you see AI as a leader in AI. And you, and when I say you, I mean Eagle, but I also mean GE Healthcare. So I know that this is your third year on the GE Healthcare side, to be specific, the third year where you've topped the FDA list for AI-enabled medical devices. So I believe now the count is 72 510K clearances. You might be more than that since my last time that I did some research with that. So I think it's very clear that GE Healthcare is really leading the way when it comes to AI-enabled medical devices. So there's a lot of attention on what you're doing and where you're going with that. So what does this really mean for the future of GE Healthcare? Are you turning into an AI company? Are you just embracing AI-enabled medical devices? I mean, what's the future of GE Healthcare?
Well, I think that, you know, just the number you gave there sort of speaks the story in the sense that I think we're already is an AI company. And if you look a little bit further into those numbers, you'll find that, you know, the vast majority of those products, if you look at the FDA list, are radiology products. But actually, there's a huge number among them that are tagged radiology that are actually in cardiology, which is my pathway, because a lot of the cardiology products like cardiovascular ultrasound are reviewed by the radiology panel within the FDA. So that's why they're tagged radiology. But cardiology is going to be a huge part of AI moving forward, not just radiology. So I wanted to just put that out there. But I think, yes, you know, AI is a huge part of our strategy. I think it's, as I said earlier, it's a super important ingredient at so many levels. You know, we'll continue to develop and use AI as algorithms for image reconstruction. You know, we have something we call Sonic Sonic DL, which is, you know, allowing us to really be able to use AI in MR reconstruction and move at so much higher speed than the past. We have AI in our imaging chain or in our cath lab. So it's really in the fabric of everything we do. And with the next sort of wave of AI, with foundational models, with large language models, I think we'll just see more and more of that. So I would say GE Healthcare is already an AI company, and we are just starting. You know, we are just at the beginning of the journey, and I think it's just going to pick up speed as we move along. And not just GE Healthcare by ourselves. You know, we are working on this in a partnership with so many. You know, I mentioned the hackathons earlier, which is one way for us to reach out. We are also working with some of the really big companies that are leading AI also outside of the medical space to develop new things around AI. You know, we're partnering with a number of smaller companies that we can orchestrate their AI algorithms into our products, because obviously with our very large install base, we are in many ways a perfect partner for maybe a smaller company to reach the market, you know, to leverage the footprint that we have globally and then bring their AI to market. So I think that we are working on a very multifaceted strategy, which is about AI, but it's not just about us. You know, it's really about creating an ecosystem that can allow this to move faster and faster as we progress.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. So I always like to round out my interviews for Device Talks AI with a discussion around collaborations and partnerships. I've been in the industry 18 years, and nothing has brought the industry together the way that artificial intelligence has. It really is. I mean, you can't do it alone. You can't do it in a vacuum. So I love that you really share that you're looking for external partnerships. You're working with emerging medtech companies or emerging AI companies, so it's kind of the smaller. How can potential external partners contact GE Healthcare to see if there's a there? I mean, what's the first step into knocking on the door of a medtech giant?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that there's not just one front door to GE Healthcare. There's so many angles to this. You know, I lead the cardiology care team, and, you know, and we obviously encompass a lot of different product teams and all that. So it's important in a big company like GE Healthcare, of course, to find the right people. And I think my advice would just be to reach out maybe to the relationships that you might have in GE Healthcare. But there are also, I mean, there's many of us that have an open door and are very willing to speak to somebody that might have a valid proposition that they think can be a good complementary, either as technology or something else to GE Healthcare. And I also just wanted to add that it's not just about us and other companies. I think, you know, going back to the multidisciplinary element of this, this is about also companies working together with academics and researchers, because there's a lot of things happening outside the industrial world that might be the sort of next wave of AI. So we work on that type of thing as well, like really academic research, where we can maybe be the channel to market, but we want to be engaged in an early stage as well. And we're working with the professional and clinical societies, like the American College of Cardiology and the European Society of Cardiology, for example. They all have a very active AI strategy. And for us, it's super important to partner with them because they can help guide us. AI is not just about the models, it's also about how it's impacting clinical practice, how it's changing workflows. And we need to work with the professional societies on that element as well. So I think this is really a place where so many different players come together, and it's only through teamwork that we can make the change that we're looking for.
Oh, it's making the medical device industry, which I've always defined as familial, even more familial.
Exactly.
So let's shift and kind of think about the future. So we'll start a little more narrow. I know that we've already highlighted the future of GE Healthcare when it comes to artificial intelligence. I know you did a beautiful job with that, but is there anything, like any new AI-enabled medical devices in cardiology that we can look forward to in the nearer future?
Well, you know, it's difficult for me to sort of give you insights into the future. There's aspects there that we just need to keep to ourselves a little bit. But I think what I can share with you is that, you know, I talked about pathways, and one of the products that we actually released last year, which is really a pathway product, is something we call CardioVisio, which is a way for us to pull together data that are coming from many different modalities with a very clinical view. So initially we're targeting patients that suffer from atrial fibrillation with CardioVisio, and it takes data from the EMR, allows you to trend any sort of trajectory for that patient. Either it could be changes in heart rate, or could be changes in blood pressure, could be medications and things like that. Put that together and then provide some decision support for the care team, that we can help to really find care gaps along that patient journey. So maybe according to guidelines, one patient may not have the appropriate test that they need to make sure that they rule out a certain condition, for example, in all that. And then we can give that sort of decision support there. So that's a brand new product that we developed. And it's really, again, very focused on patients and patient outcomes, and then pulling data from so many different sources. So in the future, we, of course, hope this product to be even more predictive and then leverage all that data to be able to create some new insights. But we are really on a journey to transform data into insights so that the whole care team can be empowered by those type of insights that we hope to unlock through our AI strategy.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I think I read a statistic recently that 80%, it was 80 to 90% of our current data in the industry is untapped and really unanalyzed. So it's sort of like the human brain. I don't know what the potential is once you start really tapping into it. So that's really exciting. Let's go one tier up. So what do you think AI might help with the future of cardiology in particular? And if it's a duplicate to kind of what you're saying, that's okay too. But I was just kind of thinking about cardiology at large.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with cardiology is that patients that suffer from different cardiac conditions, typically they're quite multimorbid, meaning that they have multiple conditions. They don't just have one thing. So, and oftentimes if we have, like, let's say we have a solution for AFib, I'll just mention that, or, you know, maybe something else for coronary artery disease. But it's not like you always, as a physician, know exactly what's going on, right? You come in with a patient that have shortness of breath. What do you do, right? So I think that as we move higher and higher on that sort of value pyramid, from algorithms that can automate measurements to applications that can automate workflows to care pathway solutions that can be helping you make decisions on AFib. I think the next level is what I would call episodes of care, like AI solutions that can really help the care team manage better episodes of care, where, you know, the diagnosis or the care pathway or care plan may be totally unknown at the outset, but that AI can just help you piece together all the data that you have, either from the community, from the home, from hospital, and then allow you to get some insights into that. Obviously, the physicians will be the ones making the ultimate decisions, but I think AI can really play a role just as we move up from algorithms to workflows to care pathways and then ultimately episodes of care.
That's terrific. Do you have any last thoughts or anything you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I think maybe I'll just go back and underline again what we talked about earlier. You know, innovation in the medtech space is going to be teamwork. It's going to be a cross-disciplinary effort. And I think we just all have to team together across the industry, you know, across hospitals, across universities and societies, and just find ways that we can collaborate in a way that moves the frontier. So, healthcare or cardiology, and if AI is a tool that makes it happen, you know, then we're there to play.
Well, Dr. Igal Samset, General Manager of Cardiology Care for GE Healthcare, thank you very much for joining me on Device Talks AI. You've left me feeling more hopeful for the future. Thank you.
And thank you so much for having me.
And that's a wrap. Another episode of Device Talks AI in the books. Thank you very much for joining us and for taking the time to listen to my conversations with both Dr. Samset and Tom about two things that I love so very much: the medical device industry and innovation, and bringing the people of the medical device industry together in person or virtually. So speaking of virtually, just a reminder, September 10th, 11th, and 12th, we are holding a 3-day Connected Health virtual series. It is free to you because of our incredible sponsors, S3 Connected Health and Maxon. So thank you to our sponsors of that series. Go to devicetalks.com to register. Tom and I will be hosting it. Again, go to devicetalks.com or west.devicetalks.com to learn more about Device Talks West coming up October 16th and 17th in Santa Clara. And just another, hey, this is for you. The 25% off registration code for West is DTPOD25, DTPOD25, get 25% off. I am so thrilled to conclude another fabulous episode. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank all of our supporters in the medical device industry. And I will see you in September. I will see you in October. And I will see you through my screen and through all of the beautiful messages that you send me on the next episode of Device Talks AI. Thank you so much.